Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande City Council meeting. This is Tuesday, January the 8th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Ray?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute. We're very pleased this evening to have Bob Lund here representing Arroyo Grande and Bloom to lead us in the flag salute. And if you would, please remain standing after the flag salute. Dr. Meyer Harnett.
Under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
O thou compassionate God, thou who art generous and able, we are servants of thine, sheltered beneath the providence. Cast thy glance of favor upon us. Give light to our eyes, hearing to our ears, and understanding and love to our hearts. O God, unite us and connect our hearts with thy indissoluble bond. Verily, thou art the giver, thou art the kind, now thou art the almighty.
Thank you, Dr. Harnish. Okay, Bob, we get to hear about a subject near and dear to my heart. Tell us about AGIB.
Thank you. I have to tell everybody that this for this participation is the community spirit, the benefits of seeing what this group has done throughout our community. We're suffering through some pretty tough economic times, and without Arroyo Grande and Bloom, I'd seriously hate to think what the city would look like today. We certainly wouldn't have the flowers and the plants and the cleanliness that we have today. And I'm also very proud of our community members because they also are stepping up. When we first started out 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, we'd start picking up trash. We used to put on our website how many bags, how many hundreds of pounds of trash we would pick up. Well, I'm glad to say today that we hardly pick up trash very often anymore. It's about once every 3-4 months. And the community has stepped up. There's not as much trash being tossed out on the streets. And a lot of people are going out involuntarily picking it up themselves as they walk around. A lot of the residents' yards are looking better, and it's sort of a nice thing that's spreading throughout our community. So I'm very proud. We still need a lot of volunteers, so if anybody wants to join us, please call. So our workload actually increases every year, and we need more volunteers. So please come out and join us. We have a lot of fun, as Mayor Ferrara and all the council members have participated one time or another, most of the city staff. In fact, the city staff is looking to do a special day this year where they all will come out and do a special project for the city, hopefully on some city property, where they can feel that community spirit with us and make it beautiful. Thank you.
Bob, you want to tell them just very quickly about the website and where we meet on Saturday morning?
Yes. Our website is arroyograndeandbloom.org. And if you do join us, we'll sign you up on our email list, and I send out notices every week as to where we meet. Usually we'll meet back in Old Han Alley at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Sometimes we do projects during the week, but we always gather and we always have fun. It's that community spirit that's sort of infectious that we get out there, and then afterwards when we get done, we can stand around a little bit and take a lot of pride in just admiring the work that we've done. So, yeah, please come and join us. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And when Bob's talking about Saturday, for those of you who are up early, huge difference when we have a lot of people show up and just put in a small amount of time. You can really see the difference. So come on out and join us. Okay, moving on to item 5, agenda review. 5A is a announcement of our closed session from the last meeting, December 11th. The council did meet in closed session where we discussed two legal items. The council reconvened into open session, and we had no reportable actions taken during that closed session. Item 5, continuing on with agenda review, 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6, special presentations. We do indeed have a very special presentation this evening, and I would like to invite Commander Pryor forward at this time to
on a ball this evening because he's away on a scheduled vacation, but he does send his regards. The swearing in of new officers is always an exciting time for the new officers, their family, and of course the police department and the city. These two officers have succeeded in making it through a grueling process and came out on top. I would now like to call Officer Dustin Phillips and Officer Philip Dolman to come up for the swearing in.
And repeat after me.
I'd like to tell you about your new officers and allow a family member to assist in pinning on their badge. First, Officer Dustin Phillips. Dustin Phillips is no stranger here after serving as both a cadet and a reserve police officer. Dustin moved to the Central Coast in 2009 and put himself through the Allen Hancock Police Academy. He graduated the academy in May of 2010. Dustin started working for the Roy Graney Police Department as a cadet, and shortly after, he started the reserve program for the Guadalupe Police Department. He worked both positions simultaneously for a year and then was offered a reserve position with the Rio Grande Police Department. While on field training, Dustin tested for a full-time police officer position, and upon successful completion of our 600-hour field training program, he was promoted to a full-time police officer. I'd like to quickly recognize and thank Matt. Was a volunteer firefighter here in Rio Grande a few years back and is now a full-time Santa Maria City firefighter. His brother Nick is also a firefighter. And now Dustin is joining them to continue to carry on that spirit and tradition of public safety in our communities. Dustin has asked his mother to pin on his badge, so I invite you to come up. Sir Philip Dolman. Philip Dolman is a seasoned police officer joining us as a lateral entry from the Lompoc Police Department. Philip was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He has one brother who is also a police officer in the Pittsburgh area. At the age of 18, he joined the Air Force Military Police, which brought him out here to the Central Coast in 1999. He was enlisted for 6 years and was promoted to the rank of Staff Sergeant. During his time in the Air Force, he was deployed to Kuwait and Saudi Arabia during Operations Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. He was honorably discharged from the Air Force in 2004, at which time he entered the Allen Hancock Police Academy. Philip was hired by the Lompoc Police Department during the academy and spent the next 8 years with that organization. During his time at the Lompoc Police Department, he served as a patrol officer, school resource officer, and detective. On top of the experience obtained during patrol, he received specialized training experience in a variety of disciplines. Philip has earned a master's degree with an emphasis on management and leadership through the University of La Verne. He moved to the Five Cities. First memorandum you get to receive from Chief Anabali. Thank you all very much for showing up this evening.
You know, you don't all have to leave. We'll be out of here in another 2 or 3 hours, so. Okay, we're going to continue on with our agenda. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not listed on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward, once again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay, we will close community comments and suggestions, and we will move to item 8, which is the consent agenda. If you're following along on this evening's agenda, we will be addressing consent items 8A through 8G. And this is normally a group of items that the council approves in one motion, unless there is an item on the consent that a member of the council the benefit of those of you in the audience, we will be pulling for further discussion. If I can find it here. 8G. We will be pulling 8G for further discussion. So anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on any of the consent items, this would be your opportunity. Anyone? Okay, seeing no one, we will close the public comment on the consent agenda, bring this back to the council. In addition to 8G, are there any other items to be pulled?
8C.
C, Charlie?
C.
Any? Okay. I have a request to pull 8C, and of course, as I indicated, we're going to be pulling 8G. I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A, through 8, well, the remainder of the consent items besides 8C and G.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion.
Code Amendment 12-002. Applied for by the City of Rio Grande for property located at 279 Alder Street.
Okay, thank you. And with that reading, did we have that motion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Councilmember Ray, 8C, Charlie.
I am just so glad that Angie is here, because the only reason I wanted to pull this is to make sure that it did not go unnoticed, that yet again, in our annual acceptance of the comprehensive financial report, we received a unqualified opinion, which means it was just as it should have been, with no errors and no reservations. So thank you so much for all your hard work, and I just want to make sure that the city recognizes what good hands we've been in, and what a great job you do over there. Thank you.
Now, don't you feel bad about what you're going to do?
I wasn't going to say it.
I know. He looks at me like he's going to cry.
Yes.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, we're going to move on to 8G. Steve and Teresa, you want to cover this? And or Mike?
Yes, Director McLeish and Mike Lynn, our assistant engineer, will handle this item.
Mr. Mayor.
Mike on, Steve?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Mayor and council members, this evening we're requesting a portion of a design contract to be funded. This is for phase two of the Montego Street sidewalk project. Funded some time ago. Phase one was the south side of the sidewalk infill project. Phase two on the north side is proving to be a little more challenging. I'm going to have Mike Lynn walk you through the project so you're aware of the project constraints and issues. And again, staff is recommending to proceed with a portion of the design tonight.
The city has been awarded federal grant funds as part of the Safe Routes to School project to construct sidewalks on the north side of Montego Street. This is actually phase two. Phase one was constructed in the late 1990s. As you can see on the graphic, the south side of the roadway is a complete section of sidewalk. The north side, there's intermittent sections, and there are some difficulties with the construction that could complicate it, and thus that is why we're here tonight, to have you consider the design contract. We had Wallace Group, which is a consultant engineer to the city, do a preliminary analysis of each of the sites to determine the difficulties that we would have in construction, or potential difficulties. So if we start at the, well, for one thing, Montego is a street going east-west. It starts at, I believe it's Hillcrest is the wrong one that's stated here on Google, and proceeds west toward, or east towards Ocean View Elementary. So it's a closed street. To the sidewalk project that was done for phase one, we've also installed some crosswalks going across Montego, right at Hillcrest, and across Hillcrest. And some citizens actually constructed the DG, decomposed granite pathway, along Hillcrest to allow an adequate space for, or pathway for children to be able to get to the school. But it has been noted, and Teresa and I actually made a site visit out there today, the witness, there are some students that still are going on the north side of the sidewalk to try to meet their parents who are parked along the roadway. And sometimes they just cross intermittently across the street, so this is to alleviate those concerns. So if you go through each one of these individually, you can see that this is 1250 Montego Street, so this is starting right at Hillcrest and proceeding toward Ocean View Elementary. The first three homes have sidewalks installed, so nothing needs to be done at this point. The next home, this is where it gets a little problematic. And at this point, there's bulb out the driveway instead. There's the cursor. And if you actually bulb out the driveway, it will allow you to be able not to affect it. Well, this is the big problem with this. I'll have to back up a little bit. We can't change the elevation of the garage, and we can't change the elevation at the street. So if we were to put in the traditional sidewalk in line with the sidewalk that's already installed, it would steepen the grade of the driveway past legal limits that we would allow as part of our standards. And in fact, if this house was constructed today, we probably wouldn't allow it to be quite this steep. So to combat this, I'll just go ahead. This was actually done on El Portal Drive in Shell Beach. This was part of the report. And see, these are similar situations where you have a roadway that's essentially cut into a hillside. So you have the uphill portion, the downhill portion. They actually bulbed out into the street within the parking lane. And since this isn't used by cars anyway to park right in front of the driveway, there is no loss of parking, and it allows us to be screen 1234. No, you're correct. That we'd actually bulb out into the driveway portion, and then we could actually construct the sidewalk with a short retaining wall adjacent to the property. This one's actually a little bit easier when you get to 1226 Montego. There's some rocks and brick and things that they put on their hardscape. You'd actually would have to cut into this surface and put in about a 2.5-foot retaining wall, which is not difficult, but But you still reach the problem when you get to the driveway. So with this, we would actually bulb out the driveway, which would allow you to get to a gentler grade, and thus would not lose any parking either. This is a vacant lot. This, again, just needs a little retaining wall and some grading. Not a big problem. So that's just kind of the basics. There are some things that have been brought up by residents, such as this one here at 1226. There is an existing stairway that goes down to the street level. Unfortunately, we have to do a topographic survey of the entire street to determine what really we're capable of doing in each situation. And thus, that's why we're here tonight, because as part of the federal grant, they will not reimburse us any of the money unless we actually proceed to the construction phase of the project. And the way our schedule is laid out right now, that will be this summer when the kids are actually away. So June 16th is when we would start this project. When we complete the design, what we told the residents at the Traffic Commission meeting is at that time we would give them the options, allow them an opportunity to review what we are proposing, make any kind of changes, and at that time finalize the design. Then we would bring it to the City Council. What we want to avoid is coming to City Council, having upset residents, and then not being able to do the project at all. Then we would lose the money that we're currently placing out for design. It was, the contract's right about $20,000. So it's something that doesn't really need council approval since it's already a project in the budget, but we just felt it was prudent to come to you and to determine whether you want to proceed with the design at this time or perhaps do a modified design where we just do the topographic survey first to eliminate the concerns of a lot of the residents. That's essentially the entire proposal in a nutshell, so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, I have a quick question. Mike, this area here, is this the entire parking lane? Is that parking lane combo bike lane?
Actually, the roadway is wide enough that you can have a vehicle path in each direction, east and west, and then there is parking on each side. So it would be 8 feet for the parking, 11 feet for the travel lane, so it'd be 8, 11, 11, 8.
Okay, my, I guess my question is, rather than try and piecemeal this thing with bulb outs, is it possible to start where we're challenged here with the narrowing of the sidewalk, encroach into the parking lane, not worry about driveways, not worry about retaining walls, but just, for example, if this is a parked car, it would be parked over here. Why couldn't we just carry the sidewalk all the way through until we got to that vacant lot where we could, you know, comfortably come in? But instead of going in and out, why couldn't we just widen the a stretch here, install a sidewalk, and narrow this parking lane a little bit?
Well, unfortunately, with the width of the street, since it is only room enough for two parking lanes and two vehicle lanes, if we were to encroach, because that's what we first thought, that maybe we could do that, and just use the existing vehicle lane to install the sidewalk, but you essentially lose the parking. Because the vehicle lane is 8 feet, we'd be taking up 4 feet of it.
Well, that white line is not a real line. That's a blue line.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is from Google Earth, and they always put their little lane in the middle. That's not a real traffic stripe. That's
okay. You should put a disclaimer on that white line.
Yeah, you're correct. You're correct.
Questions? Additional questions?
I do. Okay. I'm kind of where the mayor's at. I'm still not quite understanding. It seems like you're asking to do a lot of engineering work, which gets expensive. Do I have to? You're going to keep on me, I know. I appreciate it. It just seems that we're trying to make it more complicated than it needs to be, and I'm trying to figure out how we're losing parking by doing what you're saying. Is it because if they park it narrows the street too much?
Well, the street, it's a finite width of the street. So if you take the two 11-foot vehicle lanes and the two parking lanes, that's 16 plus, that's 38 feet. I think it's actually 40, but it's not very wide. And so in order to keep the parking on the south side of the street, the two vehicle lanes, if you take up 4 feet, 4 to 5 feet of the existing parking lane on the north side, it would only allow you 4 feet to park, 4 to 5 feet,
okay,
which is not adequate width.
Okay, then my other question is, I'm not clear based on the description. Are you having property owners that are asking that the city do improvements that are beyond the norm on their own property? And not that I'm necessarily opposed to that, but I just don't want to get into a situation where other parts of the city go, well, you did it here, why aren't you doing it here?
Well, I think a good instance is right here at 1234 Montego. You see the little stairway that goes down to the parking? Okay, there's an existing elevation right at the doorway of the home, and then you have the elevation of the street. So if we cut into...
Mike, we're not seeing your pen. Use the mouse.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. There we go. Okay. So this elevation will not change, but if you cut into the existing hillside and put a retaining wall there, then you have a stairway to nowhere. So where do we go? And the one thing you could do is make a little walkway that would go the full length of the... Yeah, I'm having trouble with that. That would go the full length of the retaining wall that would then tie into the driveway in some manner, or you just eliminate the stairway altogether. Those are kind of the things I can't answer conclusively without having a topographic survey to see what kind of options would be available. I could guess, but it's actually better to have an actual real topographic survey.
I guess just for the record, I want to say that whatever we do here, we got to be mindful of other parts of the city where people might be asking for the same sort of treatment, and I just want to make sure that we're being fair in terms of our outlook on where we're going. I know the street well, and I'm all for the improvements, but we just need to be fair.
I think our guideline would be, as it is in the past on projects, we'd only pursue any kind of use of private property which would require an easement if it was absolutely necessary to construct the improvements on the public property that we need for the project. So,
did you have a question?
I think you answered it. So the road's 40 feet.
Correct.
And there is no design exception to do a 7-foot parking line?
You could do 7 feet, but it's not wide enough to actually do a full parking width.
You can legally do it. Is that, in fact, didn't we
you
do that?
You could go to 7. We've done it in a lot of places. And on a residential street, you can go as narrow as 10 feet. But since this is heavily traveled for school traffic, it's not recommended.
Because okay. You could actually use the mayor's, if you went down to that narrower standard. But, okay. And the other question I have relates to what, if you do just a topographical survey, will you be able to answer all of the residents' questions without going into the next piece of the design phase? That's because there is two steps here, so I just want to be sure that if we approve the $8,500, I believe it is, for the topographical survey, that we're going to get to the point that you need to be for us to be able to reach a decision with the neighborhood.
Yes, because at that time, and it's something I left out, we would then meet with the residents and we'd kind of tell them what kind of things are potentially
before you've actually designed, you say these are the kinds of things we would have to do, and these are the kinds of impacts they would have, even though we don't know exactly to the inch how tall the wall will be or how far the bulb out would be.
Correct.
And when you do these bulb outs around driveways, how much road do you lose? It looks like, I'm going to say about 6 feet each side, probably 6 foot square.
You'd essentially lose the parking lane, which isn't being used there anyway because you can't park in front of it.
Well, you're losing some part of the parking spaces and potentially a parking. I mean, every driveway has two bulb outs, so every driveway, if it's 6 feet, you're losing 12 feet of parking. Whether it adds up to a space or not depends on the spacing of the driveway. Is that about right?
That's about
6 feet?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Is that it? Okay. Councilmember Ray?
My question got answered by Steve. Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
I have no questions.
One quick one, Mike. Are there certain circumstances? I know that, you know, the whole Safe Route to Schools program, we've gotten very creative, particularly on Hillcrest with the PATH network, because that's what we were sort of forced to do. Are there circumstances along Montego, given the space restrictions, where we could, in fact, move to a non-standard width for a sidewalk?
We could,
shrink
but
it a little bit.
Since it's federal money, it's kind of their money, their rules, I think we have to subscribe to the standards. I think with the ADA, American Disabilities Act, you can go as narrow as 36 inches, but that's only to go around a fire hydrant or a pole, not for a full section. So I think that would not be possible.
Are we sure about that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on 8G if there's anyone in the audience who would like to do so. Anyone? If you would.
Good evening. My name's Kirk Friend, and we live in the greenhouse at 1234 Montego. And so, of course, we're concerned, you know, with the steepness of our driveway. It won't work to put a sidewalk there, but we're also concerned with that stairway that Mike pointed out, you know, because we have people coming up the stairs and the driveway and the steps next to the driveway. And also, one day I went out and measured the sidewalks on the first three homes, and they were from 36 to 48 inches, and the ones that were installed on the south side were about 60 inches. So you might need work done on those also. I don't know if you would or not. But we support some kind of bulb out solution, you know, because we want a sidewalk, but at the same time we don't want to lose the stairway or the driveway. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. All right, then coming back to, we'll bring this back to the council, and we'll start with Council Member Ray.
Well, I'll say that, like Council Member Brown, I'm quite familiar with this street as my children went to and currently go to Ocean View, and I am wholeheartedly in favor of doing anything we can to move kids safely down this street. It's a madhouse twice a day. It's a madhouse at open house night. I would not be in favor of shrinking a parking lane or shrinking a sidewalk, because kids are going to be on their bikes, they're going to be on their skateboards, there's going to be a mom with a stroller with a kid going around them. It's just not a place to shrink those kinds of things. In addition, I would have had the same concern that Mr. Vrind had, even had he not come out here, which it protects the neighbors to come out a little bit. It also may relieve the craziness of the parking that comes up there to have some defined areas. So I'm glad to go forward with this. I'm glad we've got federal monies to do it, and I'm in support of going forward at this part right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown?
I have nothing to add other than what Councilwoman Ray said. I agree with what she said, and I'm ready to move forward.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I'm ready to move forward as well. I do think that it's 50-50 whether we'll be able to pull this off. I really do think that we have to be honest with ourselves and admit that this may be very well be $8,500 out of our budget, which is why staff is bringing it to us. I'm also somewhat concerned about the timeline. Just to clarify, because the discussion that Teresa and I had earlier was that we wouldn't necessarily be in construction this summer. We would just be far enough along in the process that Caltrans would be convinced that we were actually going to do the project.
No, we would actually plan to construct in the summer. It's going to be tight to try to get this portion of the design, meet with the residents, get the full design done, get it bid for construction, and be ready to go at the very beginning of summer. It should be clarified that the funding for this project is earmarked for us, but we didn't make the last fall 2012 deadline, so we do have to show continual progress. Make Caltrans comfortable that we're going to be able to continue with this project, or they will reprogram those funds.
It's a really tight timeline. I mean,
it is a tight timeline.
Your six-week bid process makes it May 1st. So, but at any rate, I'm in favor of moving forward with this part so we can get an answer to this question that we've obviously been trying for years to decide.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I am also in favor of going forward tonight with what we're trying to accomplish. The only question I had earlier was the concept of the ball bounce, but when I've seen the picture, it makes sense and I think be a good solution, probably a better solution than trying to cut into any of the hillsides. So I'll support going forward tonight with this.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'll make it unanimous. I think a topographic survey and a subsequent engineering review will give us the information that that we need to make a better decision, and I'm sure answer some of our lingering questions and some of the questions of the homeowners. So we'll take it a step at a time, and this will get us to a better position in terms of information. So I'll support it as well. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I move adoption of AG with the phased approach for the contract.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, that takes us to next item on the agenda, and
11A.
That is 11A, the on-street bulb out and parking spaces. And this is at 1172 East Grand Avenue. And Mike, this is, and Teresa, this is yours as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, this project is a potential solution to a typical conflict between a bike lane and a parking lane where we don't have enough width on the street. It is in front of 1172 East Grand Avenue, a recently approved portion of our bike lane on East Grand Avenue is approved. The applicant has come up with a potential solution so he could save his parking in front of his office building by offering the city some portion of property for use as right-of-way where we could be able to have a full-width sidewalk, parking lane, and bike lane located in that vicinity. And again, I'll have Mike Lynn walk you through the project.
A little bit of history on this. In 2011, we were doing a resurfacing project on East Grand Avenue between Elm Street and Halcyon. Now, the other sections of East Grand Avenue between Halcyon and the freeway and between Elm Street and Oak Park Boulevard were already equipped with bike lanes. This particular region, or this segment between Elm Street and Halcyon, did not have bike lanes. So as part of the project, we were going to install bike lanes on each side. The problem is, when we got to this particular spot, 1172 East Grand Avenue, you can see the location of the traffic island. The width between that and the office and the curb next to the office building did not allow enough width to have both two travel lanes, a parking lane, and a bike lane. So we had to make a choice at that time. There were two existing parking places right adjacent, right about where this tree and this pole were at, that were originally installed by the traffic at the direction of the Traffic Commission because there was a doctor's office at the adjacent office building. We checked with the people in the office building at the time it went to Traffic Commission, and it now is a legal office. There was no reason that we had to have parking along that side. And so we determined that the bike lanes were a higher priority, where the Traffic Commission determined this, and suggested that we remove the existing parking and install the bike lanes. Unfortunately, with the timing, we were right in the middle of the project. The contractor had already left, so I'll just leave it there for a moment. About a year later, Orrin Cox, the owner of the building, and John Pryor, his architect, came to the city and wanted to reinstall parking adjacent to the building there at 1172 East Grand. They thought one thing they could do is install a bulb out right in this region, and the bulb out would be similar to this one that we installed on the Phase 3 East Grand project between Elm Street and Oak Park Boulevard. So it would be very low height, but it would allow a little portion. But it would be exactly like we have here. The striping would match. The widths of the roadways are the same, but you would have enough for the parking lane and allow the bike lane at the same time. Unfortunately, well, let's go back up here. So we went to the Traffic Commission. They actually wanted to bulb into the sidewalk. And I'm sorry, this didn't show up, so I had to, it didn't show up within a PowerPoint, so I just put it as a separate exhibit. They wanted to actually cut into the existing sidewalk so they would have adequate width to restore parking and enable the bike lane. You can see this is the line of the curb, the existing curb. There's only space for either a bike lane or a vehicle lane. They thought that by putting in the bulb out, which would protect it, and to cut into the sidewalk area, that you'd actually have enough room to put in parking and put the bike lane back in place, which our community development director agreed with. Some of the concerns we had was the width of the sidewalk would be compromised. So with that, you can see here, 3 feet additional concrete sidewalk width, it would actually do an easement to the city to allow construction of that sidewalk on their property to provide the adequate width. So we took this concept to the Traffic Commission. The Traffic Commission heard the arguments. And what they determined was, since the striping had not been performed yet for the bike lane, that they preferred us just returning back to the original configuration we had before of putting in the two parking spaces that were there previously. Traffic Commission concluded. Mr. Pryor and Mr. Cox came to us after that and said that they still wanted this configuration, and they noted a lot of other things, and they're here tonight, so I'm sure they can talk about this, that they had a problem with delivery trucks that were delivering, that would queue up in this area, that would then compromise the driving lanes so that people would have to kind of go around each other. They saw that as a problem. And they thought it would be better to actually have that commercial parking out on the roadway. So on August 6th, well, let's see, and on November 21st, they actually came to us with a formal appeal of the Traffic Commission's advisement and requested that we put it on for City Council consideration. So that essentially is the staff report. I know that they are available to speak this evening, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you would have.
Okay. Any questions for Teresa or Mike?
Let me just ask you at this point, the staff report gives an impression that one of these is going to be, at least one of them is going to be a handicap space. And yet, in the description, you also say that it would be a non-standard space. Is that the proposal, that they would be handicapped spaces, or?
I believe that's his proposal, but I'm sorry, I left that part out of the report. We would deny that request. Just, there is nothing in the CalDAG standards, which is the standard ADA document that dictates this, that would allow on-street ADA parking. And the reason is that you could maybe do it for the passenger side, but you'd actually have to lower the sidewalk because there can't be any curb there. It actually has to be a zero-height curb. So we'd have to go in each direction and depress the sidewalk before you got to the space. It would have to be adequately signed, and there's really no signage convention that allows this. And then when you open the door on the passenger side, obviously you're right in the middle of a bike lane on the driver's side. So you don't get the appropriate clearances that you need to have to conform to the standards. So we looked through a number of documents today, and we saw nothing that would allow that more than a temporary basis.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone representing the applicant who would like to come forward?
very fine presentation by Michael, Lynn, and we've, I think, got a win-win situation here. It's very simple and clean. And to speak to your last point about the handicap parking, we had started with that notion, but I think even at the Traffic Commission, we backed away from that. Not a heavy requirement, because if someone so deems that they have a placard, they can park wherever they want with that placard on the street. Happens where I drive a disabled person, too. We pick a spot if there isn't a marked zone. So that, to me, that we don't care about that. That's not an issue I think we brought up at that meeting. And what started this was that Orrin is focused on his project with an eye to getting that parking back, and he saw these other bulb outs down the street, and they looked attractive, and he's trying to maybe gain back the parking, and then the bulb out would create a way of mitigating the termination of the parking. In other words, before you get to that intersection, down further, so this kind of aligns with that. We at the Traffic Commission, they brought up a little bit of a drainage question, but that photograph you had demonstrated that the drainage just runs right under that thing by the city standard. There's a standard for this bulb out that we have copies of and would adhere to. So drainage is not an issue that they thought it was at a point, but they somehow started liking the idea of the bulb out, and in their deliberations, it kind of got left out of the approval. So that's why that was one of the main ideas, was let's dress this up, and Mike seemed to be for it, if we considered the view corridor from the traffic of Briscoe. And I don't know that you've done that, but I heard something to that effect. So in other words, it's not in the path of view to restrict anybody's vision down the street as cars are coming. Now, The most fun part about this, to my thinking, is it's a win-win for everybody, because Mike didn't mention that Orrin Cox would like to foot the bill. And that made him real happy. Traffic Commission, too. But I think that's replicates some of the area of the flagpole and entry to the project. So it makes sense where it's at. You have a little bench there. It would be a little kind of a little mini plaza. So to my thinking, this is very attractive, functional, creates that bike lane that is ambiguous at this point. I'd be happy to answer any questions if I've missed any points.
Let me ask, what's the, can you put up the design? What is it, where the trees are in between the two spaces? What's the pocket that you put there? Because when you cut that back 3 feet, you're essentially getting back to its planter. What's the spacing in there?
That's a hard plan to see any dimensions. I might just pass this down to you.
You can just tell me.
A more legible, but 12 feet.
If there's 12 feet.
A bulb out that allows that planter to stay right where it's at, okay, and yet allows for this new parking. And I will.
So there's a 12-foot space in front of each tree.
Line, and we take it in 3 feet to get the 10-foot width of sidewalk, that leaves 2'2" at that point. So it looks to me like it's easily done.
12 feet is plenty. So the second question I had is when these parking spaces were in place, did the FedEx trucks and those kind of trucks park on the street and deliver? Because when I was standing there, I didn't see, although this drawing makes it looks like there is a way through the building, I don't see how they could deliver to the back of the building from the street. They would have to walk all the way back down to the driveway and come and carry their stuff all the way through the parking lot.
They serve a lot of that complex and even other properties by parking in behind the actual handicap stalls and the other parking.
I understand. So it's a pain. I'm just wondering why they wouldn't continue to do that.
And, well, that I don't know, but maybe signage or something. But I believe the original stalls that were there that were repainted red was one regular parking, one commercial out in the street previously.
I don't know who used it. If they used it, yeah.
Maybe Mr. Cox could address that.
No? Okay. My experience is they park as close as they can until you send them somewhere else. But, okay, those were my two.
On the screen. So just to understand, this line here would be the new width of the sidewalk after the easement?
Well, actually, the colored portion is the spot that we would get the 3 feet of additional concrete. So it would be the 3 feet plus the 4 feet.
Use a pointer?
Sorry. Yeah. This is the 3 feet that it would give it to us in addition.
Right.
To make up for the 3 feet that was taken
right.
away.
So that's a new sidewalk line?
Correct.
Okay. And that's what you have proposed in this diagram here as well?
I don't believe that dimensioned it. If you want a clearer picture, I'll give you this one.
Okay. Actually, that was the original one that went to Traffic Commission, and it did not have the 3 feet. We discussed that when he came in with the appeal.
All right. And you're okay with this one?
Yes, sir.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
This item. Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the council. We'll start at my right with Councilmember Brown.
A question for staff, if I might. I'm a little confused by your page 2 of the staff report. I'm just trying to figure out. It says on August 6th, there was a presentation where it looks like you were against the cutouts to provide additional parking. And then on the November 21st comment, I feel like you've changed your position, or I'm just trying to get a feel for that.
I think originally we went to Traffic Commission. I was representing us at Traffic Commission, and I did the report and stated that we were against the cutouts. And then when they came in with the appeal, they met with both myself and Teresa McClish, and she pointed out that we did get the additional bike lane that we wouldn't have with the other option. And so that's when she favored it.
And it was also clarified that we'd get the extra right-of-way needed for the sidewalk at that time.
So after that, you're fine with the cutouts then?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, with that, I'd be willing to approve that option.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I have to admit that at first I had some real problems with it. But most importantly, we do keep the bike lane. I think one of the things we heard loud and clear during the circulation element discussion was connectivity of our bike lanes, and here we would have another half-block segment just cut out of our bike lane if this is a good solution versus what was approved at the Traffic Commission. So I think this is an excellent solution, and I'm in favor of it.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Ray?
Well, I'd like to just add that I see that with the applicant, I don't know if we're calling them an applicant or an appellant or whatever at this point, but I'd like to thank you for doing good problem solving. And instead of coming and complaining about what was done, you offer a solution, you offer the finances to do that, you offer a way to do that with the additional easement, and it makes the whole process so that we end up with something that, in my mind, the Briscoe intersection there is kind of like a de facto gateway, because people come off the freeway and come up and over Briscoe, and anything we're doing over there to make that look nicer, more functional, I think is a little upset. So thank you for approaching it in this way, and I can most certainly support this tonight.
All right. Thank you, Council Member or Mayor Pro Tem.
I too will support this tonight. I applaud you for coming forward with a solution, not just a problem. And I think, as it's been stated, it's a win-win, and I'll support this tonight.
Okay. Thank you for all the reasons previously stated. I too can support this. I don't see a downside. I do see it as a win-win. So I'm in favor of moving forward with it as well. And I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'll move that we accept the proposed construction of on-street bulb out and parking spaces adjacent to 1172 East Grand Avenue.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion?
I just have one quick item. I'd like in the future, if possible, the mouse is white on white. It's really hard to see if there's any way to colorize the pointer for the mouse or use the red pointer. It would help because people on TV can't see it, and I'm getting old and decrepit, and I can't hardly see it either.
Necessary here to guarantee that the project will actually be completed.
Okay, with the motion maker?
So amended.
Okay, and the second? All right, very good. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right, that takes us to 11B. This is a consideration of conceptual changes to the refuge collection bin size option and rate structure.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. The city recently received a rate increase request from the refuse collector and recycling operator, South County Sanitary Service. That rate increase is scheduled to be considered by the city council at the February 22nd meeting. During consideration of the last rate increase, which was in 2011, the City Council directed the operator at that time to come back with a 20-gallon bin option the next time a rate increase option is to provide a lower cost alternative for individuals and small families, particularly those on fixed incomes, to provide some relief from rate increases. It also provides an additional incentive for recycling. However, the reduction in rates for those taking advantage of that option reduces overall revenues, and therefore that reduction in revenues must then be made up by increasing other customers' rates at a higher amount than otherwise would be required. The operators provided us a number of options of how those other costs could be distributed. Since this would require a change in the rate structure, the operator really needs some direction at this point from the City Council on the preferred rate structure alternative before they can begin to distribute the required public notification for the public hearing when the City Council will consider the rate increase request. And therefore, the purpose of this item this evening is only to provide direction to the operator on if the council were to ultimately deny the rate increase request, then we would just maintain the existing structure. And that's why the scenarios involving the 20-gallon bin all involve the alternative proposed rates and rate structures under this rate increase request. Staff has recommended what we have labeled as alternative five because it provides the 20-gallon bin option that had been presented by the City Council, but also has the least amount of impact on the other customer rates. Tom Martin, the general manager of South County Sanitary Service, is here this evening. I've asked him to make just a brief presentation on the different options that he's provided us to consider. I should also point out that within your staff report is a memo from the consultant that we've hired to review the rate increase request, and that was just to verify the assumptions that they've made in coming up with these different rate structures to ensure that each of the options is designed to come up with about the same amount of revenue, so we're comparing apples to apples.
Martin, South County Sanitary. The 3.2% rate increase that Bill Statler did his review on, and he's presented a staff report that you'll be seeing on the 22nd, essentially raises $7,000 a month for South County Sanitary out of the Arroyo Grande revenue stream. As you look at alternative 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, they all essentially, based on some of the assumptions I've made, come up with about $7,000 in revenue. So in terms of the revenue aspects of them, they are all the same. Alternative number three is exactly the City of San Luis Obispo rates. So you would have exactly the same rates as the City of San Luis Obispo. Alternative number five, the recommended level from city staff, requires a 6.9% increase for commercial and every other residential rate structure. So if you're currently a 96-gallon customer, you'd be at $24.76, and it'd go up by 6.9%, so it'd end up at $26.47. Excuse me. And so, gallon can, and it spreads the pain over just the residential group. And you know, if you look at the 96 gallon rate, currently citizens in Arroyo Grande pay $24.76. Under all of the number two, number three, and number four scenarios, sometimes they may pay $30.73, they may pay $39.12, they may pay $28.11. It just depends on where you're going to get the money from. There is some assumption made in each of these alternatives that people react to price increases, and that some of the 96-gallon customers will become 64-gallon customers, and some of the 64s will become 32s, and some of the 32s will become 20-gallon customers. And in the case of number five, yeah, I got it right here. We're assuming that 560 customers, currently you have 819 customers that are 96 gallon. I'm assuming that 560, so of those will stay as 96 gallon customers. So we're going to lose they're going to be contributing the 64-gallon rate, which is now 20, which would be $21.50 under that scenario. So each of the four categories of customers may change, and therefore that's why the rates need to be higher. And so it, from my standpoint, it's merely a mathematical problem, and we've made some assumptions here, and we will certainly review those assumptions after 6 months to make sure they're in the ballpark about the number of people that decided to go to which number of can. But it merely is a political decision as to which one you prefer, because we have rate structures in Morro Bay that have a 20-gallon can and that are 100% variable. City of San Luis Obispo has a 20-gallon can, and it's 100% variable. Los Osos has a 20-gallon can, and it's semi-variable. You currently have a semi-variable rate without a 20-gallon option. So anywhere in between 1 and 5, you can call, and I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Questions?
Why we dropped that in only on alternative 5?
Because by adding the 20-gallon can structure, you actually lower the revenue generated by the residential group. And so in order to recover that, you have to get it from the commercial people.
No, I understand that in alternative 5. Why isn't that being considered in alternatives 1 through 4? Why? That's what my question is. Why are we only considering the having an impact at all on commercial?
Well, in alternative 1, everybody's rate, both commercial and residential, goes up by 3.2%. Okay. In alternative 2, commercial goes up by 3.2%, and these change according to this. In the first 4 scenarios, commercial is going up 3.2% our original request, per the staff review.
Okay.
The only reason it's going up 6.9 in alternative 5 is to make up the change in the revenue.
Okay, thank you. That answers that question.
In your scenario, you're basically saying that a third of the people would switch over because their rate's gone up by a dollar.
And then we looked at the Los Osos 96-gallon percentages. And in all of those, they seem to be pretty consistent once you implement this kind of scenario, that there are some people that will reduce because it's not a 3.2%, it's a 6.9%. And initially, people's reaction is, well, hell, I'm going to change my can and go to the lower one. I'm going to pay less. And there is always some shakeout kind of, you know, they move down and then they decide that, well, that's just not working for me.
And then let me ask, what was your number for the number of people, since the real change is between the 32 and the 20? What is your number for the number of people who would go from 32 to 20?
I have 728 people will sign up for 20-gallon service in alternative number 5.
Out of?
The total AG base is...
Out of how many were in 32s before?
32 existing or 2629.
So about a quarter. Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry, that differs with what I was given on paper earlier. It says 2629 would go down to 2521. $25.21, not less 728, but less 107.
Yeah, but you're going to get some drop down from the 64s.
Right. Okay. So that differs.
So you mean it rolls all the way to 80.
Yeah, I'm saying 96 customers are going to go 64, 64 right. Will go to 32, 32 will go to 20. And so
there's only 100 people changing from 32 to 20.
Yeah, you know, after everything is said and done.
I just have a couple quick questions, and one's financial and one isn't. It seems to me like you have a pretty comfortable idea of, given other jurisdictions, who's going to drop to a 20-gallon. You have some comfort level that you know what's going to happen.
I'm reasonably sure. San Luis Obispo has had it for about 4 or 5 years, and it doesn't vary a whole lot. I mean, we get kind of the same percentages, you know, year after year after year. And the demographic in Arroyo Grande, from our standpoint, although not as student-populated, tends to be residentially very much the same. So I'm assuming that it'll be pretty close to that. And the 32 would try and recycle a little bit more to get down to the 20. If you go to the 20 and you still put out 32 gallons worth of trash, it's going to cost you a fortune. It's not a wise move to move to the 20-gallon can and put out a bag of extra twice a week, twice a month.
You think it actually increases diversion?
We, in a scenario, I've said that it will save $1,130 in landfill fees. So at $30 a ton, that's about, what, 400 tons?
That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Question, Chair. Okay. Thanks. Not a public hearing, but if anyone in the audience would like to make comments on this item, John? Okay. We'll bring it back for discussion and an action. We'll start with Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I'm always hesitant that we always load up the commercial for residents. It's only, what, 60 cents more expensive, but it is a fair approach, and I do think that we've used this approach many times in the past, and I think that's maybe time to stop just assuming that we can, it's just another business expense that they can absorb, even though to them it's actually a relatively large expense, 7% of what might be $250, $300 in trash, or for a restaurant might even be $500 or $600 in trash. So actually, in favor of alternative four, I'll support whatever direction council goes in. But I think that we should reconsider whether we should just continue to divert to subsidize from commercial to the residential. So I think alternative four would be the best alternative.
Okay, Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree. I just don't want to pass on residential expense to businesses. I don't think it's fair. It's. I understand the theory behind it, but because of the cost, and the cost ultimately is going to get passed on in some form anyway.
Well, the only part that I'm agreeing with Councilmember Guthrie and Brown is that I don't agree with Alternative 5. that was my concern, too, is how commercial fit into this, and I don't think this is the time to be hitting businesses harder. I'm leaning towards Alternative 2 because at Alternative 2, I think there's an even more of an incentive. Well, I don't think there is more of a financial incentive to stay at 32 and 20 gallons, and that the people that bear the burden of the extra cost are the people who are the heavy users at the 96 and 64. And if you break down the difference between alternative one at our current rate structure, and that includes the increase, so it's a little misleading, but the change from alternative one to alternative two at 32 gallons is negative. And at 64, it's plus 25 and percent, and as far as the increase anyway. And 96 is at plus 20. So the people who are getting hit are the heavy users, and that's consistent with what we do in the city with water and our other tiered rates as well. So I would like to see the San Luis Obispo model. And rewards those people who are recycling properly and who are doing their part to reduce their waste, and gives them an even bigger incentive to do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, you know, the first question that comes to my mind is why should anyone have to spread the pain? But then if you put this in perspective, we're talking about the community and the community's refuse use. So it does make sense that we do spread this out. I'll agree with my colleagues at the other end of the table there that we really don't want to spread this unduly into the commercial side, but I think I'll have to take a little bit of an exception with Councilmember Ray's analysis. So who are the big users? Well, they're big families. And it's not a question of choice with them. I don't know that it's necessarily something that they're going to be able to control that much. We're not talking about the businesses. We're talking about the families. So I'll support alternative four along with Jim and Tim. And I think that's the direction we should be going to.
And I think, Tom, you and I go back a little ways and on rate increases. And this is something that kind of sticks with me. And Steve and I have had a couple of conversations about it. We approved a 5.15% interim year rate increase in December of 2011. And what I've not heard here, and what seems like sort of a inconsistent, well, maybe not inconsistent, but a cumbersome progression is the discussion on the 3.2% increase and the justification for it and the rationale for it. That's what I'm not hearing tonight. And along with that, without that information, and I understand that we gave that direction to staff at a point in time, and that the operator's coming back with pretty much a response to that direction. So I can understand that piece of it. But at the same time, if we decide that we don't want to
involves no commitment towards approving any or all of the rate increase requests. It's just providing them direction on the public notification of how to structure the proposed rate increase.
Okay. Well, I'll just speak for myself then, and because I know you have other options that you're all considering, but you know, I'm looking at I want to state that I really appreciate the work that South County Sanitary does. You guys have been great, very timely in responding to issues that have come up. At the same time, when we look at consumer services across the board, it seems as though these rates have been going up much more so than other categories of consumer services, and that troubles me. And so I'm really not going to land on any option or alternative tonight. I'm going to reserve my comments for February when we actually because without that additional information, which isn't provided here, I'm happy with leaving things the way they are, which would be alternative one.
Discussion, Mr. Mayor.
So anyhow, that's my two cents. So anyone want to take a stab at a motion?
Just quick discussion based on your comments. I want to say that I agree with you. I don't want this discussion to make it seem or assume that the council has made any decision regarding rate increases. I think we've basically been, this is an exercise in determining what's going to be put out to the public. So in terms of notice, so I think the mayor's right. If when we're cutting services left and right and we have budget issues everywhere else, we need to be able to justify what we're doing. So I would ask that the mayor's points of concern be addressed in any future staff report and any rate increase request, because again, I don't want the public to think, and I don't want South County Sanitary to think that this
yeah Yes, and that's kind of the crux of this whole item this evening, is that they need this direction so they know what to put in that Prop 218.
So is this going to be the typical mail ballot protest type thing?
Yes, that's what Prop 218 calls for.
Okay.
With the option of coming here and actually presenting a protest at that public hearing itself.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay, well, with that,
who wants to try a motion?
Okay, with that, I'll make a motion that we direct staff to prepare the alternative four for the 218 notice, leaving open the discussion of whether we're going to even move forward with that in the end. But for purposes of preparing the notice, I would move that we use alternative four.
Second.
Right, we have a motion and a second discussion.
Just real quickly under discussion, I share Councilwoman's concern about using as a way to encourage recycling, but I do think as far as recycling goes, but I do think the reason that I like alternative four better is because it is not as painful all the way across the board. So that's the reason I would choose that over alternative two.
Okay. Any other discussion? Nope. Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
No. Okay. Moving on to 11C, this is consideration of fiscal year 2013-14 and fiscal year 2014-15 budget goals and priorities. And we've saved the best for last, huh?
Council, the city is beginning the process of preparing the fiscal year biennial budget for fiscal year 2013-14 and fiscal year 2014-15. The budget goals are established as a first step in the budget process to provide for city council input to assist staff in preparing the budget. It does not deal with costs or available revenues at this time. It simply provides some overall direction to staff on how to prioritize the proposed allocation of funding that is available. Now, in 2010, as you know, the City Council approved what we've referred to as our Critical Needs Action Plan. With limited resources, the purpose of the plan was to focus our efforts on those areas established as major priorities, and the budget recommendations continue to focus primarily on those same critical needs action plan priorities today. Those department goals in detail. Instead, we do have each of the department directors here this evening available to answer any specific questions you have on their goals. Instead, what I'd like to do is just briefly highlight and summarize for you the major citywide goals, and then highlight just a few of the department goals that have the most likely impact on the budget itself. So major citywide goals that we are recommending first include completing the design and the PANED for the Briscoe Interchange project. Those first two phases of the project are fully funded, and we have a funding plan in place to fund future construction, which includes $5.6 million now that has been approved in state and federal funding. Second is to fully fund and construct the pavement management program, sufficient to establish and maintain a schedule. Plan. Third is to continue an escalated sidewalk repair program, which we also believe we can fund through the funds that have been included in the approved five-year local sales tax plan. Fourth is to address the police department's facilities needs through one of the two options that we have that the council just recently approved. Fifth is to address the corporation yard facility needs, and the staff will be coming back to council in the near future to present a plan to very cost-effectively address these needs through the addition of one small prefab office building and then some very minor upgrades to the other existing buildings. Sixth is to address the city's water needs through a combination of water conservation efforts, our conservation measures, future potential recycling efforts, and additional water supply that may become available to us. And at the next meeting, we will be bringing to you the recommended appointments to the City Charter Committee to begin moving forward with that. And lastly is to develop and implement recommendations to enhanced customer service within the city. And a lot of the individual department goals actually relate to that overall major city goal. Most of the department goals that have been set forth in their detailed list, we believe can be funded through ongoing funding that we have available. So we just wanted to, I think, highlight just a few goals that we think are more likely to have impacts, direct impacts on the budget and have additional funding needs. And so we've kind of set out four that we wanted to talk about a little bit more, and I've asked a few of the staff most knowledgeable in those projects to just give you a brief update and some details in terms of the technical aspects of what we're proposing to do. The first two items It's over 20 years old. It's very antiquated. We think a new system would have significant efficiency benefits as well as significant customer service benefits. We would like to, preliminarily, what we've talked about is trying to package the telephone system item with the upgrade of the computer network servers into one funding package and utilize a lease purchase funding program to address those in the budget. That process would reduce the initial impact. Even more importantly, it would provide a more consistent ongoing funding source and program for these types of needs and upgrades that take place periodically. So we'd be able to fund those on a more consistent basis and make sure that we, on an ongoing basis, we could make the necessary upgrades as they come up. So that gives you the kind of the layman's side of it. I'd like Walt Kuzak, who is our IT manager, to give you just a little brief presentation on more of the technical.
So starting with the servers, basically there's seven core servers. There's more than seven servers in the city, but there's seven servers that provide the core functionality for what we do and kind of make things tick here in the city. And those seven servers are 7 years old. Typical replacement for a server is 5 years. We extended warranties 2 years ago so that we could, because of the budget situation at that time, so we could kind of hang on to them a little bit longer. So basically we're at a point now where we need to look real hard at replacing the servers and move forward with doing that. One of the scenarios, there's a few different scenarios in replacing the servers. One of them is just to replace rack servers like what we have now, status quo, replace it with the same technology. What I'm proposing is to virtualize using the latest technology and basically providing a path for progression moving forward, for expansion, for, you know, as it'll allow the city an easier path to grow as we move forward. Also included in that whole server upgrade project will be a data backup solution. Our data backup solution is also, I think it's 7 or 8 years old. It's pretty antiquated. And over the past 7 or 8 years, our IT environment has grown exponentially. So software upgrades, all of our Microsoft products, the Exchange for email, SQL for database, and Active Directory are our network environment. So essentially upgrading our Microsoft environment as part of that. So the whole project would be a server upgrade project, and all of those different components would be part of that. So that's kind of the server part of that. The upgrade of the phone system, again, like Steve said, it's, you know, our phone system is real antiquated, definitely doesn't meet the functionality needs for customer service, just for basic changes, for real simple things that we need to do with our phone system. We're constantly having to call AT&T and have them do that for us because of we're a centric system, the type of system we have now. A digital phone system or a voice over IP phone system would basically bring more of management of our phone system in-house and allow us to do those types of things in-house. Somebody changes offices, changes locations, changes numbers, we can do those types of things in-house, as well as saving money on our phone bill. Essentially, we would just pay for line charges. We wouldn't pay. System. So the investment that the city has in a cable system and our fiber optics and the things we've done over the years would be able to, that the phone system would leverage that infrastructure. Call routing, I know a call menu, basically somebody calls into the city and setting up a menuing system to route calls to the proper department has been a goal for some time. And that's, we can't do that with the system we have now, and that's just a basic feature of any voice over IP or digital phone system, as well as collaboration. And the digital phone systems, the voice over IP systems, are just, depending on which system you go to, there's just a ton of things that you can do with them. So definitely a direction I think we should go. And I think that about covers it for the servers and the phone system upgrade. And those would be my two major goals over the next 2 years. I have a quick one. You talked about virtualization. Is that cloud-type stuff, or what is that you're talking about?
It is. It is cloud-type stuff. Basically, what it does is it sets up a path to create those things.
Comfortable that if that were to go down, there's some backup or something to back.
It actually creates more of a high availability environment than what we have now. In that, in the scenario that I'm looking at now, basically we would be consolidating seven servers, seven physical pieces of equipment into two. One would be a primary server hosting seven servers. The other one would be basically a failover.
Great.
So with virtualization, you have automatic failover. One server fails, the customer or the client on the receiving end doesn't ever see any difference. It just automatically fails over.
Great. And I just want to acknowledge the work that you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
If I understand the cloud technology, Walt, it's a kind of thing where you can set up a program, an access program that's specifically tailored to your needs. For example, if you just need storage, that's one thing. If you need retrieval on a daily basis or monthly basis, you can set it up that way. It's not just straight storage, right?
That's true. Yeah, you can do just about anything in the cloud, right? Third-party servers and using, you know, these outside companies to host your applications, to host your data, that kind of thing. There's a lot of implications just surrounding that alone, security being a big one, integrity of data being a big one. Basically, your data lives off-site, and that's not everybody's real comfortable with that. You're giving a lot of control and putting a lot of trust in an outside agency. So the cloud is kind of a lot of people are kind of taking a hybrid approach to that. Some things are in the cloud, some things are not. They're kind of holding on to the stuff that's real critical to them. But yeah, to answer your question, it's way more than just storage these days.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Ready to move on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Two more quick ones. Next, I'd like to have Ryan Foster come up and give us just a brief update on the GIS program, which we've done quite a bit of substantial things on, but we've identified also a number of goals to get it to where we needed to really be able to get all the benefits for our operations out of that system. And Ryan's working on that.
Yeah, just to give a quick overview on that, we've had a GIS basically the core data you need to build off of for any GIS system. And over time, our base layer has gotten out of date. It was accurate in 2002, but we've had lot line adjustments, parcel maps, tract maps over time. So we're finding that more and more when we get the updated information from the assessor's office, there's more and more records that don't match up with a shape that's in our system. So we do need to update that. We don't have the software that we have from ESRI, which is the industry standard for GIS software, is the base level, which basically lets you view data that's already been created, manipulate that, make maps, do some simple types of analysis. But we're looking at upgrading that package to the next level, which would give us all the tools that we could then edit the data so that we could maintain it in-house, whether that means that we need to go out and hire a consultant to bring us up to speed or work with Cal Poly and get a student from the geography department to do that remains to be seen, but the first step would be to get that good. Just the simple information lookups by address or parcel number to see what it's zoned, what the land use is, and that sort of thing. And then over time, integrating that with our permit tracking system to kind of unify all of those systems and make them publicly available for the through the internet for all the citizens.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. Any questions for Ryan?
All right. Before we go on, with the council's permission, in fact, maybe not with the council's permission, but we're going to take about a 3-minute necessity break. Okay?
Sure.
And then we'll come back.
Okay.
Okay? So we're going to take a short adjournment.
3 won't do it.
Okay, council is back in session, and we're continuing on with 11C.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. We are actually down to the last department goal that we'd like to highlight, and that is the land use element. And our community development director, Teresa McClish, is going to make that presentation.
The budget goals for the community development department. As a planning research that our general plan is slated for update. Probably the most broad in scope element that's most broad in scope and pivotal for a general plan is land use element update. This is a chapter in our general plan that describes the ultimate build-out pattern for the city. As you know, and it is the element that we have to attack next. We are currently working on our housing element, which is sitting up in review stage at HCD, and we've completed our economic development element update in-house. The land use element, however, will require kind of a practical work program to enable us to pull all the elements together, update the land use element, and complete the general plan update. This can mean for many jurisdictions significant costs. We are looking for a more practical approach, but it is a major goal for us to achieve in order to review policies for
Okay. Questions for Teresa? All right. I'm assuming in that work program, Teresa, we're talking about the same sort of public intervention, public workshop programs that we normally go through when we update the general plan. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct and required as part of that update.
Okay. And then Steve had a question for you, and I guess it's related to the overall budget, determining the budget goals and directions and so on and so forth. Are we at some point going to do the same thing that we've done in the past, and that is have community workshops that focus on not only our critical needs, but, you know, gather input as well from the community? I know we've done that in the past. Is that something that you intend to do this time around, or...
Yeah, we did. I think it was the last budget. We did a little bit differently. The budget goals. Goals. We felt and did get concurrence from the council that this year, since we're really focusing on the majority of the same goals, we really were embarking on a lot of new goals, and the effort was going to really be to try to maintain these goals and maintain service levels. Added on to the fact that the workshops the last time were a little bit disappointing in terms of the attendance and participation. So we really wanted to do a combination of two things. Is one, with council, go through this budget process early on so we get that early input in the process. But we have also set up a lot of new systems since last year with Facebook and with the website and with a number of things that we kind of want to do in two phases. But rather than focus on workshops where we may get a handful of people if we're lucky, we really want to try to focus on a more electronic strategy this time where we think we could reach more people and get more meaningful input back. So that's been the proposal this week, but we're open to...
outreach, we may have more of a response that we've had during the physical workshops. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Was that it, Steve?
Yes, we'd be happy to answer any other questions you have. Otherwise, we're respectfully recommending approval of the goals.
I have one question for you, Teresa, and that is on page 4. Under planning, and I guess I just need a clarification here. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the 6th bullet down under planning, apply for grant funding to implement one or more projects identified in the Bicycle and Trails Master Plan. This comes back to an issue that I discussed with you previously. I'm not so much using grant money, although I'm certain that we're going to need that, if nothing more than, you know, just a anyway, the whole focus of that, of this bullet point, in terms of our previous conversation, was the Paulding curve and the sidewalk, the safety sidewalk, the bike lane, and the restoration of the historic wall, which has a correlation on the condition of the bike path. So is that included in this bullet point? And if it is not, then where is the Paulding curve in the list of things that you that we need to do?
I believe it's separately identified as a goal to work with the community groups to be able to achieve that restoration, wall restoration and bike lane. It is also included in our bike plan. That the bullet under the planning section simply includes it indicates that we're eligible for BTA funding and we can now assist on our list of priorities here somewhere, so that would be included.
Well, if you recall, when we were discussing the bike and trails master plan, we focused on that as sort of a comprehensive project with those three elements. Yeah. First and foremost was the safety aspects associated with the sidewalk and around that curve, because that's where we have a lot of people that complain about how unsafe it is trying to walk from to the village from you know, the areas east of town, and particularly around that bend. And then secondly was maintaining the bike path, and then related to that was the restoration of the historic wall. So and yeah, you're right, we do have some community-based groups, you know, AGIB for one, that would partner with that. But I'm just wondering if we've identified that those three elements in this plan as a
projects, and then we would augment that with the wall project.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Steve, can you, I did get your email right before the meeting, but I wanted to ask the question publicly. The only question that I had on the list, and now I've lost it, it was with regard to the expansion and enhancement of Operation Blue Watch, which I don't have any real issue with, except for that I believe that needs to be that should be a public hearing item. And so you got a response from the chief. Maybe you could expand on what was said in that email, because I just read it so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can pretty much expand on what I received, but it might be better to have Commander Pryor come up, and he communicated directly with the chief, and I think he has the basic information you had asked for. These chairs aren't made for weapons and things. So I did speak with Chief Annibale today. I need to finalize several issues, pardon me, surrounding this new technology with connectivity, retrievability, and some terrain issues before we can expand. But we're obviously very pleased with the results of this system so far, and it's been very instrumental in solving numerous crimes within the city. It's actually helped us in an active investigation right now that we're investigating from a major burglar here in the village. Also, pardon me, he wants to conduct a needs assessment with other departmental heads to identify the best locations for the additional cameras. A couple of areas that we've identified already are Soto Sports Complex and also around our local schools. But we also want to talk to the Public Works and Recreation Services to get their input also. Does that answer your question?
It does, but going to Steve, I guess it's really more public hearing on that.
Absolutely, and that was in the comment from the chief that we received. That was his intent to bring it to the public once these other things, to the council and the public, once these other issues got resolved, and then he'll be ready to bring forward recommendations to you. So
thank you. Thanks for
guarantee on that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, once again, John, you're the only non-staff member here. Any comments? Okay. Then we'll come back to the council and start with Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I'm in concurrence here with the major goals, so I don't have any issues there. I want to thank staff for putting together what is a very expansive and I think considering our situation, a very aggressive action plan here for the following 2 years. So I can support the goals and as put forward by staff.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm in agreement as well, and I have nothing further to add than what Mr. Guthrie.
Okay. Said. Thanks. Councilmember Ray.
I'm just going to break out my pom. With less, and that just says so much about not only our department heads but all the people in our departments. I just can't even fathom that we're talking about expansion of services in this climate when we're talking about shortfalls, and that's because we have great, great people in the city. So thank you all for that work that you do, and I do not look forward to the prioritization of this list that will be coming, but I'm in support of this tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Mayor Pro Tem?
I, too, would like to applaud staff for their work in getting this list together. Your dedication and willingness to stick around is noted. And thank you all very much, and I'll support this tonight, too.
Okay, well, I was going to say something and, you know, gang up on Angie, too, but now I'm not since you did. So.
We love you, Angie.
Anyway, yeah, I concur with all of the previous comments. I'm especially grateful to the work that you've been able to do, Walt, in keeping our technology together. staff time is reduced, that's even more justification for ensuring that we have a robust technology capability, and that includes GIS. So all of that said, I think, Ryan, you mentioned that there were some possibilities where we might look at some more economical ways of achieving some of our goals, and if that means maybe utilizing Cal Poly or some of the local resources here to do that, certainly that would be the more optimal approach, I think. But certainly the nature of the goals that you've laid out, I think, are the ones that we need to be pursuing. So I'm going to support these goals as proposed this evening, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that the council approve the proposed budget goals and priorities for year 2013-14 and 14-15.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Jeff, before you leave, I just wanted to also make a comment that I appreciate whatever it is you're doing down there, at especially with the parks crews and the street crews, the medians and the bulb outs and a lot of the landscaped areas around some of our retention basins are really looking nice. So I appreciate the hard work that the crews are doing out there. Okay, moving on to item 12, city council member items. We have none listed. City manager items, none listed. Steve?
Yes, sir.
Council communication, any comments? Start with Karen and then go with you, Joe.
Just real quick, I dropped Steve and Tony a note last week that I will not be in attendance at the next council meeting, so if there's any adjustments.
Well, you'll miss the waste management rate increase then.
Well, wait until just bring it to the next work. I'll be out of town, unfortunately.
Okay, I did have a quick bit of information. I got a request from during the last mayor's meeting, which was hosted by PASO, from Debbie Peterson, who's the mayor in Grover Beach, as all of us are aware, and their conference center hotel issue is coming up before the Coastal Commission on Thursday, and she indicated that a letter of support would be most welcome. That letter was drafted today. I took the liberty of doing that and sending it off to the Coastal Commission. I also plan on attending that meeting, which I think is going to be at 8 or 8:30 on Thursday morning in Pismo Beach. So I'll be there to support them once again at their request. I'm hopeful that that's okay.
I think the only thing we wanted to bring up is just a reminder that we are trying to get all the commissioner and board appointments made at the next meeting, which we need to get the which means we need to get the staff report and all names together at the end of this week, first part of next week. And that includes, once again, the charter, city charter committee appointees or recommendations from each of the council members. I think I have three of the five so far, so we are getting close. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think each applicant, even if they're on another commission still needs to fill out the form. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were just asking that existing commissioners that are being reappointed complete the application, our current application. Some of them are have been on for a while, but we kind of are communicating with some of those folks too. So if you talk to any of your appointees, I think Kitty's handling. Mr. Mayor, I see you looking at me. I think Kitty is calling your appointees and handling it for you.
Say again?
Kitty is handling, contacting right. your appointees. Well, the mayor had asked.
Well,
the mayor, and this is just for existing seated appointees that have been on for quite a while. We're just trying to update our records, and we've revised our application in the
Perhaps
last year
Perhaps we could
or two.
Humbly ask if those yes. you could do the same yes. For me and Jim.
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Is that
and it's not required. It's just we want to try and update our records as best we can.
Are you trying to cover all, including?
No. Just the ones that are expiring and being reappointed or reappointed. So we'll handle that for you.
And I think we
I'm
also
glad I paved the way for you guys here. Okay.
I think we also wanted to mention the upcoming Channel Counties meeting that Rio Grande is going to be sponsoring this upcoming event, who the mayor has taken the leadership role. And the date, I believe, is February 1st at Pavilion.
Cypress Ridge
Pavilion.
Pavilion, yeah.
And we'll be.
You know, Dave Mullinax, who's our league representative, tries to rotate the sponsorship of these division dinners among the three counties. And this was actually Ventura County's turn to host it. We haven't had one in a while. And so the people down in Ventura County were the none of the cities would step forward and sponsor this. He then tried Santa Barbara. And it's pretty much the same situation.
They just did it too.
And so he came to us, and the reason why he came to us is because every time he's asked us to do this, our staff has literally put these things together in a matter of days. And so Steve and Kelly and Kitty sat down and met with me, and I think in a matter of less than an hour, we had this whole thing framed out. And everybody had their tasks to do, and now we have this thing moving. So, I wish there was some way that, you know, I could have videotaped the little meeting that we had. So I just want to, thank the two of you and Kitty as well for really stepping up and carrying the banner for us.
Well, it should be fun. And I had one last thing. I think I mentioned to you briefly the other day, but I went to a meeting yesterday to confirm, and the AmGem tour is proposing to go through Rio Grande this year. Pretty extensive route through up Valley Road, up Fair Oaks, to Traffic Way over to East Branch through the village and then out to 27. They've indicated that they definitely had an interest in coming back here. A lot of the pictures they used from last time they were here, they've used a lot in terms of marketing their event. And, so they would like to get back here. So it's a great route. The challenge is going to be working with the schools. They're going to right by both schools in times close to when school gets out. So we're working with the district to see what kind of flexibility they have to work around that, and hopefully we'll get it resolved.
Anything else? All right. Final opportunity for community comments and suggestions. Are you feeling okay, John? All right, item 17 is closed session. We have none this evening, and that takes us to item 18. We are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.